The Fan on Demand. You'll know everything before he even puts pen to paper. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Lynn hits a drive deep right field. It's up, up, and there she goes. A two-run home run for Adam Lynn, his third, and the Blue Jays now lead the Giants 4-1.
That is, of course, the voice of Jerry Howarth. Adam Lynn, a two-run home run last night. The Jays beat the Giants 11-3 over this four-game winning streak. The Jays have scored 36 runs. 4 games ago to John Gibbons' decision to change his batting order to go with Melky Cabrera at the top, Jose Bautista in the second slot. Since then, since that decision was made, and Edwin Encarnacion, of course, moving up into the third spot as well. Everybody moved up. Since that decision was made, those three hitters have gone 21 for 46, just 457 with a pair of home runs, 14 ribbies, 16 runs scored. Jerry Howarth is the voice of the Blue Jays, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jerry, this production, I mean, it goes back to the lineup change, and I don't know if you can say one led to the other necessarily, but the evidence certainly suggests that there was a great deal of method to John Gibbons' madness, wasn't there?
Well, there sure was, and I think what happened, Jeff, is that the leadoff man, whoever it was not getting the job done, wasn't getting on base, wasn't getting any hits, not drawing any walks. And Edwin Encarnacion so many times after the first inning led off the second. So he's one of your best hitters. And I think John made a shrewd move right there by moving everybody up and making Melky, who had a pretty good on-base percentage, making him leading off, make him lead off, and then Jose Bautista hits second. But the key is Edwin hits third.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have your top three hitters really in your lineup, all getting a shot at that starter there in the first inning when the starter is most vulnerable. And J.P. Arencibia has always said in the past, I'm a run producer. I want to hit cleanup. I want to be in the fourth and fifth spot. So John accommodated him there too, and he and Adam Lind hitting four or five have really taken off. Brett Laurie's a lot more relaxed now hitting sixth, and I think because of his presence back at third base, everything has taken a turn for the better. And when you score runs like that, and you have to score 5 runs a game in the American League, that makes your pitching look pretty good, too.
You know what I really liked, Jerry, about what I've seen from these 4 games? Obviously, the offense has returned, but in all of these games, I've seen a team that senses when a pitcher is struggling, and I'm seeing something I didn't see earlier in the year. It's almost like a feeding frenzy. It's almost like one guy's at-bat is followed by somebody else's at-bat. I mean, just look at your scorecard. The number of hits that they string together, the number of times they get to get on base together in these last 4 games. It's almost, Jerry, as if 4 or 5 players all of a sudden became locked in at the same time.
It is, and I want to go back to John Gibbons because mm-hmm. there's all this, when you're losing, well, let's fire the manager and let's do something else. John Gibbons was the one who stayed with Colby Rasmus, and he's kind of doing what you're talking about right now, getting big hits there, hitting in the number 7 spot. But more to the point, he told Emilio Bonifacio, who was 3 for 37, you're playing in that lineup against Boston and Fenway Park. I don't care what they say. You need steady at-bats. I know what's there. Go out and show me what you have. If you're a player like that, you say, boy, that manager's got my back. And what's happened? Emilio's gone off the charts too. So it's a manager's move and I think decision to manage people, not the game. John can manage the game. But when you start to treat big leaguers like big leaguers, you've got something. And for me, John Gibbons has made so many good moves here. And I'm happy to see that Alex, who's patient, has gone and steadied the course right here. And now you're starting to see a lot of key things happen.
Yeah, you know, when you look at this, we're joined by Jerry Howarth on the Jeff Blair Show. When you look at the way this team has turned it around in 4 games, obviously a lot has to happen for that to take effect. But I think R.A. Dickey put it the best a couple of nights ago, Jerry, when he talked about, and only R.A. could say this, he talked about the win being a community win Guys made plays. Guys contributed offensively. He did his job for the most part. And I think what we've seen in the past four games is a little subtle change in the mood around the team, haven't we?
Well, you certainly have, and I think Jim Fregosi said it best. When you're only scoring one or two runs a game, you look, quote, flat, unquote. That's not necessarily true. Alan Ashby always said that, too, on the air. That dugout can be as spirited as can be, but on the surface, you look flat because you're not scoring runs. But what I liked here the last few days is when the television shots went into the Blue Jays dugout, especially after the first couple of innings here against the Giants, everybody's laughing, having fun, they're relaxed, and that's what run production will do for you. Now, having said that, and they've won four in a row, for me, now I look at the next 22 games. You've got 10 division games coming up here. Those are key against the Yankees, and the Blue Jays just lost four in a row there in New York. And then you come back, and you've got Baltimore, and you've got Tampa Bay. But then, after two games with Atlanta, you've got to go down to Atlanta and then have a West Coast trip through San Diego and San Francisco. Atlanta's a division leader, and when you're all through with that, you've got Texas at home. They're a division leader. The Blue Jays just polished off a division leader. For me, the next 22 games from tomorrow, including those three games at home against Texas through June 9th, that's really going to determine the Blue Jays' season.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a great start toward trying to make those 22 games very significant to get back in the race.
Yeah, if you do look at that, we always struggle sort of, I think, in this business, Jerry, and I know you've done it a lot longer than I have, but the thing you don't like saying necessarily is this is a big game, this is a big series, because that can quite often come back to bite you. But you're entirely right about this. Given the fact that the Jays are on a four-game winning streak, these next 22 games, especially that chunk of games against the teams that are ahead of them right now, immediately ahead of them, those really do take on some significance.
They do. And when you're in your own division, every game means two games in the standings.
Mm-hmm.
And because the Blue Jays have such a poor record in the East, but now they've come together and after the slow start, now it's upon them to say, four-game winning streak, let's do something with it. The offense is there. The starting pitching's going to come around. You've now got some support to overlook some mistakes that maybe happened. The defense is probably as good as it's been in a long time. But you do get to a point in the season where if you're going to become a contender, you have to take that momentum and do something with it. And most of the teams who have done that have won 10 out of 13 or they've won 8 out of 10. And the Blue Jays have to do that not once but twice to really get back in this.
Jerry, what's the difference in Adam Lind these past couple of games?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think for Adam, probably going back a couple of weeks ago, when he drew a couple of walks, I think it really kind of bolstered his confidence because he was seeing the pitches so well. And then when he was pitched to, he started to drive the ball the other way. And now he's hitting home runs to right field, but he's also using the whole field. He's very patient. If he gets a pitch in his zone, he's hitting it. He gives a lot of credit, too, to Chad Mottola, who's worked with him, and Dwayne Murphy before that. The Blue Jays have very good coaches that way, and Chad's very good on the mechanics. Dwayne more the mental approach, the aggressive side. But I do think when you start to see the ball well and you're drawing your walks, that's when hitters get out of slumps, and you can see it within the game and within a long period of time. And I like Adam the way he's seeing the ball right now.
Jerry, Melky Cabrera, the MRI yesterday showing irritation in his hamstrings, nothing further than that. This to me, and I'm thinking about this, this makes John Gibbons' decision to me to move him into the leadoff spot even more courageous in a lot of ways, because I don't know too many managers would take a chance on a guy with sore hamstrings in the leadoff spot.
No, that's true. And however, there's probably a little fly in the ointment here because Melky did not look good in left field yesterday.
Right.
And if those legs are going to be that painful for him and he's got to play in left field, because if he DHs, that means either Lind or Encarnacion is not going to be in the lineup, and that's not too healthy either. Now, if there are left-handed pitchers, Adam's probably not going to DH anyway, but with right-handed pitchers and a predominant number of right-handers, this is going to pose a problem if Cabrera can't run, because defensively you need somebody out left field to do a little bit better job than what we see from Melky. But overall, he's been great. He's enjoyed that leadoff spot. He drew a walk yesterday and scored a run, had a double, lined the ball to right field consistently. But now those legs are going to be a concern, and hopefully he will heal a little bit quicker so that he can play left field and keep both Lind and Encarnacion in the same lineup.
Yeah, and my concern would be too, Jerry, looking ahead to that road trip to Atlanta and then to the two Western NL West cities, you're not going to have the DH there. So you want Melky's legs as good as, you know, to be as healthy as possible when you go into those games, because it's going to be hard to hide him.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And no acceleration there, and he labors going into bases, and then it looks even painful, more painful when he pulls up into second or pulls up into third. So you kind of hold your breath right now. I'm not sure what John Gibbons is thinking, and you can't protect a player like that. You just hope that he can maintain where he is and even get a little bit better.
Jerry, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much, as always. Have a great trip to New York. We look forward to your calls of the game this weekend.
All right, thanks for having me, Jeff.
Take care. That is Jerry Howarth. He is the voice of the Blue Jays right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Jays enjoying an off day today before opening a three-game series in the Bronx against the Yankees. They were swept by the Yankees the last time they went into the Bronx. Jerry's absolutely right. If you look at the schedule right now, three against the Yankees. You come home, you play the Tampa Bay Rays, you play the Baltimore Orioles, you have a quick two-game interleague series against the Atlanta Braves. Then you go to Atlanta, San Diego, San Francisco. Then you come back to play the Texas Rangers at home. You cannot overestimate how important this next 22-game stretch is for the Jays. You know where they are in the standings. They've got a chance here, right in front of them. Three of the four teams right in front of them, the Yanks, Rays, and Orioles. You play them now. You do not know about the Rays. The Rays have some issues after last night's game. David Price leaving with tightness in his triceps. You wonder a little bit about the Rays. The Orioles, we keep waiting for them to disappear, but, folks, that does not appear to happen, to be happening. And the Yankees, if anything, are going to get healthier as the season goes on. So Jerry's absolutely right. The next 22 games, starting out with three against the Yankees in the Bronx, absolutely, absolutely important for the Blue Jays. So those 22 games again, Yankees, Rays, Orioles, two with Atlanta, then back to Atlanta to play the Braves, then to San Diego, then to San Francisco. Then you have Texas at home. Those next 22 games, these next 22 games, question for you. When those 22 games are over, are you going to be liking the Jays' chances, or are you not going to be liking the Jays' chances? How optimistic are you? You've seen this team through four games now. You've seen them through their four-game winning streak. How optimistic are you that after these next 22 games, and I'll repeat the teams, the Yankees in the Bronx this weekend, the Rays and the Orioles at home, the Braves at home, then on the road to play the Braves, the Padres, and the Giants, then back home to play the Texas Rangers. How optimistic are you that after these 22 games, the Jays are going to be back in the thick of things? 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Don't forget, at the end of those 22 games, we'll be getting closer to the point where Jose Reyes is going to return to this team. The Jays now saying that Reyes could be back sometime around the end of June. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Do not forget, Hockey Central, 11-1 today, a special two-hour Hockey Central. The Leafs are cleaning out their lockers at the Air Canada Center. David Nonis, Randy Carlisle to address the media. We will have it covered totally like a blanket. We'll have it covered like, I don't know, Zdeno Chara all over Phil Kessel, whatever. We'll have it covered anyhow right here in Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Going to talk a little baseball. Until then, we'll be joined by Daniel Roberts as well, a writer and reporter for Fortune magazine. They came out, along with Sports Illustrated, with the list of the 50 highest earning North American athletes. Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather topped the list, despite the fact he made zilchin endorsements, largely because he spent some time as a guest of the U.S. federal government. in one of their fine correctional facilities. Floyd Mayweather topped the list. We'll talk to Daniel Roberts as well about David Beckham, who has retired today, or whose retirement is expected to be announced. AP reporting that he is going to call it a day. David Beckham, I believe the top international earner, but we'll check that. Right now, we'll focus on the Jays, 416-870-0590, star 590, 888-666-0590. These next 22 games, folks, the Yanks, Rays, Orioles, Braves, Braves again, on the road, San Diego, San Francisco. This is it. This is the season. This glimmer of hope you have after four games, these next 22 games, as Jerry Howarth says, are hugely important. So, the question... And I can also be reached on Twitter, at GloBlair. The question is, at the end of these next 22 games, you're going to feel better about the Jays, or do you think you're going to feel worse? Eddie in Fort Erie, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hello, Jeff. How are you today?
Good, Eddie.
Well, I want to talk about two things. First of all, last night, I'm very glad that they stuck to what they were doing in the last several games, you know, being calm at the plate, especially against a guy like Vogelsong's got a high ERA, and I was a little bit worried about, geez, with a high ERA, it's like, do you think they're going to go free swinging tonight on this guy?
Yeah, no, you know what I mean? You thought the same thing. You and I both thought the same thing.
But they stuck to it, and that's great. And the road trip or the next 20 games, like you said, I can't tell you how different it's going to be in terms of who you play between the American League and the National League teams coming up. I think after the Yankees, they might have a tough time, but I think if they stick to what they're doing, they're going to be fine against the Yankees. Baltimore, they should take advantage of. The Rays, they should take advantage of because some of their best pitchers are on the DL right now. Price, I don't know. Maybe he might be.
Mm-hmm.
And also, especially when you go to the National League. Now, this is where you got to be even more, you know, good because you don't have the DH. You're going to have to be more patient at the plate because, especially with the Giants, because we got lucky. We didn't have to face Lincecum and Kane. You have to think, will we get him again in San Francisco? And with Atlanta, they're kind of Jekyll and Hyde. San Diego, they're playing good right now, but I might see them falter a little bit. So what I'm saying is, if they stick to what they're doing right now at the plate and pitching great defensively, you know, I think they're going to do okay.
Well, you know, I like the decision, and at the time, I know Brandon Morrow was a little upset that the Jays pushed him back, but Dirk Ayers tonight talked about it in Baseball Central. I like the decision to push Brandon back because I think you needed Brandon Morrow. With these games coming up against the American League East, you needed, I think, to have Brandon Morrow in a position to start as many of those games as he can. Now he is. Now he can start against the Yankees. He'll come back against the Orioles.
Is that for sure?
He should be able to go. I would be surprised if he isn't.
Okay.
And that gives them, you know, that gives you a chance against a couple of teams that you absolutely have to beat. And, you know, that's why I think if this thing does turn around, mm-hmm. I think we're going to look back at last night's start by Ramon Ortiz and we're going to go, wow, that was a pretty significant outing. And Ramon Ortiz, it's funny, I had a couple of chances to talk to him once in spring training, just chatting with him. Ramon Ortiz is a cool guy, and he's an interesting cat. He's been around for a long time, pitched a lot of games, pitched in a lot of high-pressure games, and I like watching him work last night. I like some of the emotion you saw out of him on the mound. And yeah, the Giants right now are kind of in an offensive funk, and Ryan Vogelsong, I don't know what. You know what has happened to him. But I'll give the Jays credit. They had some pitchers who were easy pickings, and they really tore into them, and that's Jerry and I were talking about. I didn't see that earlier in the year. I didn't see them almost like a feeding frenzy. When they know they have a guy on the ropes, finish the job. That's what the Jays have done in the past four games. Pat Etobicoke here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. These next 22 games, you're going to feel better about the Jays when they're done, or do you think you're going to feel worse about the Jays when these 22 games are done?
Well, first and foremost, if there's a more knowledgeable man in this city around baseball than Jerry Howarth, I've yet to meet him or see him. That man does know baseball. He sees baseball extremely well. Let's look at the last two games against the Giants. when you can score 10 runs without hitting a home run, you're doing something right, and they did something right. I remember a game a while ago where they gave up 10 walks in one game, and this is a total turnaround. But look, let's look at what happened here, and I give the Jays full credit for the hitting, for everything. I give them full credit. They played a team, a National League team, that does not play on artificial surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
There's only two in the whole of the league, and that's Toronto and Tropicana Field.
Right.
So this team, you know, the balls were there, but they bounced over them, hit their glove. You know, there's a bit of intrepidation on this team. Sure, they're not hitting well. And the Jays took advantage of everything in this series, and they played very well. Their pitching was good, but they took advantage of miscues, of errors, and they scored on those. And that's what good teams have to do. So, yes, this is a starting point for them. But, you know, you get Baltimore, New York, or anybody else that comes in here, and you're not going to see the errors that the Giants had over the last two games.
That's true. You're going to see a different. But, yeah, and this really surprised me about the Giants. And you're right, they don't play in artificial turf. But it really surprised me about the Giants because, and you could tell some of the camera shots of Bruce Bochy. Bruce Bochy, the way he manages that team, bad pitching's going to happen. You know, you look at a guy, Barry Zito was going to get his tits lit up regardless of, you know, I mean, there was no magic there. Well, I can't say that word in the air. I'm sorry. He was going to get beaten up regardless of what was going on. But the fact of the matter is that I watched the Giants play and the way they played the game, the way they approached the game in the field was really un-Giants-like.
Yes, very.
The one thing, and I saw that team a lot in the postseason last year, the one thing I liked about the Giants, and we saw it a lot in the World Series where the weather was certainly cold in Detroit, and, you know, it was San Francisco, so we're not talking high 90 degrees. The way they approached the ball in the outfield and the infield, they were so sure of themselves. You knew that every play was going to be made, and I didn't see that out of those guys.
No, they're off to Colorado now, and we'll see how they play there. And you know, the last caller is right, although these weren't lucky wins. These were good wins.
Oh, they were good wins.
Their bats are dead. They're cold. Now, your question, the next 22 games, I don't know how to answer that, and I don't know if there is an answer for it, to be honest with you.
I'm pretty optimistic. I'm optimistic. This weekend series bothers me. Three in the Bronx, that bothers me.
Well, look at New York and look at Baltimore particularly. Their pitching has gone down. David Price went down last night.
Yes.
How long is he down for?
We don't know, do we?
So, I mean, you know, this is a huge loss.
Yeah, and if they can, I'm just looking at the schedule. If they can, they will miss Price. Price, if he's healthy, Price would work one of the first two games of that series against the Rays the 20th or 21st. If they can somehow miss Price, even if he's pushed back a couple of days so they miss him, that would be a huge advantage to them.
Oh, for sure it would be. There's no doubt about it. But the pitching is going down across baseball. You can see it happening.
Well, it's
every day in on every team. And Ortiz did pitch. I think this guy might be, you know, keep him around for a while. I think that you need a guy like that in there, and 40 years old, but he threw a good game.
Yeah, he did. And you know what? As long as he's going to throw strikes, Pat, I mean, I'll take a chance on him.
Both sides of the plate on the bottom, exactly what the guy the night before did, that kid. You can pitch like that, you're going to win games.
Yeah.
But let's face it, the Jays, if they can make up a game a week, one game per week, they'll be back in it by the All-Star break. And I don't think that's too much to ask for.
Pat, I appreciate the call. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. Dave in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So here we go. The Jays have three against the Yankees, three against the Rays, four against the Orioles, two against the Braves. Then they go to Atlanta, San Diego, and San Francisco. And then they're home to play the Texas Rangers. These 22 games are huge for this team. Are we going to, at the end of those 22 games, be looking at a team that's back in the thick of the race, or do you think things will pretty much be where they are right now?
Thanks for having me on, Jeff. my view of this team is that as much as, you know, a four-game streak is impressive, they beat Lester, they beat Zito, the Giants for sure were down, and defensively I think the Giants let Van Vogelsong last night in the first inning, or else maybe you see a bit of a different outcome early on. But my view of the club is that in the next 22 games, I think a successful stretch of 22 cuts the deficit that they're in right now between 500 in half, and maybe cuts the deficit in the loss column on the division leaders in half. I think that's a successful 22 game stretch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not yet convinced that they're out of their funk yet. Until I see them consistently win some series against division rivals, i.e. Baltimore, New York, Tampa Bay, against top-notch starters, where when they have a starter on the ropes, which in a couple series this year they did, early in outings, they had a couple games where some top-notch starters were high pitch counts early in games, and they didn't grind out at-bats. I want to see the types of quality at-bats we've seen in the last four games in New York, against Baltimore, against Texas, against Tampa Bay, against top-notch pitching in their division, until I'm sold that they're out of their funk yet. And you have to marry that up with some consistent starting pitching. Without Morrow, we don't know what we're going to see from Brandon Morrow this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He's been up and down. And you know what? Without a Josh Johnson and with a Ramon Ortiz, a 40-year-old in your starting rotation, I don't know if you can expect seven innings, one-hit, two-hit ball every time he rolls out against top-notch opponents. So I think the jury's still out. But if they can cut the deficit in the loss column and towards 500 and half in the next 22 games, I think by the All-Star break, they have a chance to get back to 500. But saying June 9th they're back in the hunt, I think is premature until we see what this club does against top-notch pitching and show that they can beat their own division rivals.
Dave, I appreciate the call. Don't forget, by the way, we will have a special edition of Hockey Central at 11 o'clock. Baseball Central will be back tomorrow. Hockey Central on at 11 o'clock because today is locker cleanout day for the Leafs. Dave Nonis, Randy Carlisle will address the media. We'll have you covered. We'll have their news conferences live, and we'll have our team of reporters down at the Air Canada Center. So we'll be getting all sorts of, reaction as the Leafs conduct something of a public postmortem after their loss to the Boston Bruins in Game 7. We'll have you covered totally right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Just take a couple more of your calls when we come back. I want to talk about this 22-game stretch for the Jays. When it's done, are you going to feel better about the Jays' chances, worse about the Jays' chances? Or do you think things are just going to be the same, that they're going to be pretty far back in the race? We'll get your thoughts on that. And Daniel Roberts from Fortune Magazine, we're going to find out how the hell Floyd Mayweather, the highest earning North American athlete, how does that happen? This is a Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. More of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
A few minutes left before Hockey Central's coverage of the Leafs locker cleanout kicks in. We're going to have David Alter. David Alter's going to be helping Dion Phaneuf clean out his locker. He's going to be taking some of his soiled undergarments and everything to the wash for him. That's how it works, right? Alter's going to be running around helping the players clean out their lockers. Maybe he'll get, you know, a couple of rolls of tape, maybe a stick, a couple of broken sticks, a couple of pucks, a couple of water bottles. It's like you just take this big plastic garbage bag and just dump your crap into it. Anyhow, Hockey Central will have locker cleanout day covered starting at 11 o'clock. Dave Nonis and Randy Carlisle expected to address the media. And as I said, our own David Alter is helping the players clean out the lockers as we speak. He's probably scrubbing some of that gunk off the bottom of the locker. In the meantime, I want to continue our discussion about the Blue Jays, a 22-game portion of the schedule that includes games against the Yanks, Orioles, Rays, Atlanta Braves, San Diego Padres, and San Francisco Giants, and the Texas Rangers. That's a tough part of the schedule. The question I want to ask you, the answer I want from you is at the end of that. Are you going to feel, do you think you're going to feel better about the Jays' chances, or do you think you're going to feel worse about the Jays' chances? Stephen Oshawa, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, Jeff. How are you today?
Good, man. How are you?
Not too bad. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Welcome and thank you.
I just want to say thank you for taking my call, and I think that the Jays in the next 22 games are going to start ripping it up. The last four games, I've noticed that they've completely turned around, and I love how they left Adam Lind in there yesterday for left-handed pitching, and I just think this team is going to be great in the long run.
You know, I like the fact that we saw, I think, in the series in Boston, that Brett Laurie was seeing the ball better. He wasn't getting a lot of joy for it, but he was making hard contact. Now he is getting something for that. We're seeing Adam Lind. Looks to me like he's seeing the ball better. And you know, I don't want to put too much emphasis on this, but there really is something to be said for a lineup that feasts on bad pitching. And it didn't see that at the start of the year. We saw this team letting pitchers off the hook far too often. We haven't seen that during this four-game losing streak. We've been seeing a team that's not only opportunistic, but a team that really, really pushes things. A team that doesn't wait for stuff to happen. A team that makes something happen. And my concern is, as long as the defense, you know, improves, that's where I'm concerned about this team going into games against the Yankees. Especially the Yankees and also the Orioles. I need to see this defense get better because I don't want outs given away. If based on what we've seen, if the defense gets better, I like this team's chances of having a pretty good 22-game run. And absolutely, if they have a 22-game run, if they can, as one of our previous callers said, you know, a game a week. If you can gain a game a week, you know you've got Jose Reyes coming back the end of June. If you can gain a game a week and put yourself in a position where at the All-Star break you're 5 or 4 out, that's not bad considering how far down the Jays have been. Just ahead of Daniel Roberts of Fortune Magazine and SI, Austin in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Jeff. First time caller, long time listener, so I just want to say thanks.
Welcome.
I was wondering what you thought. You're talking about a game a week, and obviously the defense needs to be better, but I was wondering what you thought our record needs to be over those 22 games, big of a game a week, especially in the 10 games versus our division rivals.
I'd like to see a 13-9 record or 14-8.
Yeah, and like in those 10 games against the Orioles, Rays, and the Yankees, what do you think we need to do?
7-3.
8-2, yeah.
7-3 minimum. I think 7-3 minimum.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
No problem. So there you go, the 22-game portion of that schedule won't start until tomorrow. The Jays have today off. They start a three-game series against the New York Yankees in the Bronx tomorrow. Fortune Magazine and SI came out with their list of the 50 highest-earning North American athletes. And, you know, like a lot of people, I love these lists. Daniel Roberts is a writer and reporter for Fortune Magazine. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Daniel, I got to admit, and maybe it's because I'm not a huge boxing fan, I had no idea Floyd Mayweather hauled in $90 million.
Absolutely, Jeff. It's hard to believe, but the deal he's set up for himself is just fantastic.
He got and this is, none of this is an endorsement. This is basically, now, and walk me through this a bit. He is actually, is he his own promoter as well as manager? How does it work out?
Well, the money for this year comes mostly from having switched from HBO to Showtime. And the deal that he was given was just great. I mean, part of it is probably with his being undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people complain that he's not even the most exciting boxer to watch, but he's certainly the most dominant. And the $90 million is our best, you know, we think pretty iron-tight guess as to what he's going to get this year. We're including the fight that he already has scheduled for September.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially he gets $45 million from one fight. And it could be even more than that. That's like the minimum. 35 of that, I'm sorry, 32 of that is a guaranteed purse. That's waiting for him in his dressing room, you know, before the fight. And the rest of that is a sizable cut he gets from the pay-per-view returns.
It sounds to me like this guy knows what he's doing as far as business goes anyhow.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he's... you know, I spoke to an endorsement guy for this, you know, a number of them for this story, but one of them said to me, the deal he set up is so smart, mostly because it's like his own sweat equity, literally.
Right. No, absolutely. And, you know, and of course, we know a little bit about Floyd Mayweather's background as well. I mean, to be able to haul in that much money without endorsements, well, you're right. It is. It's almost total sweat equity. The number two on the list is LeBron James. Number three is Drew Brees. There's really, LeBron James came in at $56,545,000. He's not even really close to Floyd Mayweather. Kobe Bryant, four. Tiger Woods, five. Phil Mickelson, six. Derrick Rose, seventh. Peyton Manning, eighth. Alex Rodriguez, ninth. Zach Greinke, 10th. Is there anybody on this list that particularly, I guess, other than Floyd Mayweather, that really surprised you? Like, I'm looking at the endorsements. Drew Brees, $7.8 million in endorsements. That surprised me a little bit.
As low or high?
As frankly, as a little low. Because I seem to be seeing Drew Brees a lot in TV.
Yeah, he's coming up fast, and I think you'll see that number grow very quickly. But, you know, in general with endorsements, I mean, you know, the salary figures that we get are pretty factual. And, mm-hmm. you know, it varies by sports. Some sports are harder. But for the most part, those numbers are out there in public, and everyone knows what they are. The endorsement estimation is more of a guessing game, you know, and you just have to triangulate and speak to a lot of experts and get the best possible number you can. And you ask agents to confirm, and they vary on what they'll confirm. But in general, I'd say that a lot of the times the numbers you see or have seen in past years are grossly inflated.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, I think we say with our bio on the list, but Tiger, for example, for the last couple of years, the numbers that some others have put out there are just way high.
Right.
So I think $7.8 million is a pretty good number for him, but it definitely could be slightly higher, or it certainly will be soon. And you're right that he's, you know, I actually spoke to Drew a couple months ago for a different story for Fortune.
Mm-hmm.
And he has really cultivated a family image. I mean, they've made him the dad character.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of the commercials.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is interesting. And you know what? The thing with Drew Brees is, maybe a lot of it, too, Daniel, goes back to the fact, just the way he handled himself post, you know, post Katrina with the Saints going to the Super Bowl. He's really a likable guy.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm looking at these. I love Kobe Bryant as a player, but I'm looking at the top 10 in this list. I mean, I think Peyton Manning's hilarious. Derrick Rose, I don't know that much. But of the top 10, Drew Brees is the guy that strikes me as being the quote-unquote most likable of the bunch.
That's interesting. You know, we talk here a lot about LeBron, just in general. He's obviously one of the fascinating guys in sports, really globally.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously Tiger, too. But when we talk about LeBron, you know, for a while there, you know, I just mentioned him because for a while there, he really did damage to his reputation. There was the decision, that special, and I think his likability really took a dive. And now he's bounced back. And whether that's just due to performance on the court, I mean, it's like that Tiger Nike ad they put out that says, winning fixes everything. I mean, I don't
right.
know if it does, but in LeBron's case, it has certainly helped. And I think that he kept his head down. And I'd say that unless you live in Cleveland, LeBron's very likable too now.
Daniel Roberts is a writer and reporter of Fortune magazine. He joins us in the Jeff Blair Show. Fortune has put out their list of 50 highest earning North American athletes. Actually, I'm glad we have you on, Daniel, as well, because the AP is reporting that David Beckham
yep.
has retired. He tops the international athletes list at $48,349,000 ahead of Roger Federer, Fernando Alonso. What interests me about this list is David Beckham, Michael Schumacher, who I gather a lot of that is sponsorship, is it?
For Schumacher?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting with him too because he has already retired from
yeah.
racing, but he's on the list because for, you know, we try and have apples to apples comparisons
sure.
across the board here. So for racing, the winning purses, you know, the amount we use comes from calendar year 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still included, but, you know, that's it for him. This is his last year
right.
on the list.
Well,
with Beckham, too, it's so interesting. I mean, the vast majority of that figure is endorsements.
That's why
we feel pretty confident about that total, but it is high. I mean, it's the highest of anyone on the U.S. or the international list.
Well,
let
me ask you this, because if Beckham retires, it seems to me that he's still going to be able to make money off endorsements, isn't he?
Like, absolutely, Jeff. I mean, he won't be on our list because it's for active
right.
you know, playing athletes. But, you know, it's rare to be able to continue that earnings power after you retire. We've seen a few guys do it, obviously, for a while. You know, Arnold Palmer, a lot of those golf guys have done it. But certainly you'll keep seeing Beckham. You know, I think that Favre would have been a guy that we would have kept seeing, and then he had a little mess up there toward the end. But Peyton Manning, once he retires, you're still going to see him on TV all the time.
What is it about Beckham, do you think, that for a lot of people, Frank, a lot of people in England will joke and say, well, he retired the second he went over to MLS, and he still managed to maintain this these endorsement deals. I think a lot of it probably comes from his marriage to Spice Girl as well. But what is it about him that and I'm with you, I think he's going to be a huge earner in terms of endorsements, even after he quits. What is it about Beckham that makes him so marketable?
Gosh, you know, frankly, there's obviously he's a good-looking guy.
Right.
So, women love him. And I think men like him, too, because he has a sort of edge to him. And you know, Jeff, we always talk about, you know, on that international list, some of those guys have been up there in terms of endorsements for what seems like forever. I mean, Federer is a great example.
Sure.
And I always ask, you know, I talk to guys who, you know, estimate endorsement values for a living. And I say to them, why is Federer one of the top endorsement guys? He seems to me very vanilla, if that's fair to say.
Yep.
And, you know, they say, well, some of these sports brands, that's actually what they want. They don't necessarily want a controversial guy. They just want the guy who's the best.
Right.
I'm playing Federer, but with Beckham, I think that he gets a little bit more because he has that edge. And that's not to say that he has done anything wrong. You know, that's different from having experienced scandal.
Mm-hmm.
But he has an appealing sort of rough edge to him.
Daniel, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. The list is very intriguing. Daniel Roberts is a writer and reporter for Fortune magazine. Fortune and Sports Illustrated have put out their list of the 50 highest earning North American athletes. Floyd Mayweather, $90 million, basically based on the fact he's his own management company. He's cut a deal with Showtime. $90 million. He is so far ahead. LeBron James, second, $56,545,000, an estimated $39 million in endorsements, in addition to his $17,545,000 salary. Drew Brees, third, a $40,000 salary, an estimated endorsement value of $7.8 million. And as you heard Daniel Roberts say, Drew Brees is a guy who may be on the rise as far as that goes. You certainly do see him in a, it seems, in a growing amount of commercials. That is it for the Blair Show today. Hockey Central is next, a special two-hour Hockey Central. The Leafs are cleaning out their lockers. David Nonis, Randy Carlisle to talk to the media. Hockey Central will have you covered from stem to stern, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow when the Jeff Blair Show and Baseball Central returns on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.